Good evening, and welcome to Screen Tone Club. This is episode 79 of your fortnightly manga discussion podcast. We are recording on the 20th of June, 2021, for release on the 22nd of June, 2021. My name, as always, is Elliot Page, and I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Mr. Andy Hanley. How you doing, Andy?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well, although my body has seemingly decided that this is the time for me to get my annual 7-day free trial of hay fever, because I don't get hay fever, but there's always like about 1 week of the year where I get kind of sniffly and sneezy for a bit, and apparently this was the week where my body's like, hey, don't you wish you had this all the time? Would you like to sign up to this experience? I'm like, no, this sucks. Please stop.
Order now and you get a free pen to jab yourself in the eyes with because you can't see. No, yeah, I thought I'd escaped it this year. Since moving to Scotland, the symptoms come a lot less. So it's not like I'm completely blind from March to September anymore. But it gets to about this time and I'm like, oh, I've escaped it. Thank Christ. Finally, what an improvement on my life. Oh, no, I can't see still. Crap. So it's just the eye watering that I can't do, man. I just can't see a thing. Sucks. And I'm even worse with eye drops because I am cat candid as hell. But hey, that's why we talk about things on the written page rather than like something like, I don't know, woodworking. If this is a woodworking podcast, it would last two episodes before I lost a hand. Let's be honest.
So, yeah, which would probably make it a highly subscribed to woodworking podcast just because people would want to see or hear the unfolding disaster. But unfortunately, we're just here to talk about manga. So, maybe a disaster of its own. Who knows? Listen in to find out.
Is there a woodworking manga? That's the main question. I'm sure there is.
There has to be, I guess, not localized, but yeah, please write in with your woodworking manga recommendations. I would actually genuinely like to read a woodworking manga. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, it would probably be a little more interesting than some of the woodworking YouTube videos I keep being recommended by the algorithm, which are like, check out this insane like join that you will never do because it looks complex as hell and you don't have that much like spatial awareness. So hey, the most spatial awareness I have is getting my hands around a game controller. Roller, deal with it. If you want to listen to us talk about more manga and not weird woodworking tangents, you can join our Patreon. For the mere sum of $1 a month, you get our bonus episodes, which are, we have at least 2 years worth of now, which we go into a deep dive on a single topic that you vote on from our $3 and up tier. You get to vote on what we cover in said bonus episodes. And that reminds me, after this episode, I need to check what's won this month so we can start reading it. Oops. But also on the Patreon bent, we have our shout-outs tier, and here we can shout out Mr. Rob Jessup, who appears to have undergone some kind of triathlon today. So good on you. That set looks exhausting from the photo you posted. But bless you, Rob.
I also feel like if people like go back in time and listen to this, this is not really going to pinpoint a specific moment in time because it feels like Rob does a whole lot of those. But good work anyway.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, most of the time we have meetups, he is fresh off of or about to dive into some kind of physical trial. So not for me, but I don't know. It sounds cool. So moving on to Returning Champions, the first part of the podcast where we talk about things we've discussed previously on the podcast, although in this case, not quite the manga. Previously, we talked about Girls Last Tour, the manga, which I greatly enjoyed, a 6-volume banger available now. And I talked about watching the anime and my trials trying to get it to work in a Blu-ray player on a PC. To skip past all that, I only really have one last thing to mention about the Girls Last Tour anime, which is that they're cowards. The people who made that anime are cowards and wusses because they didn't cover the actual manga ending. They cut it off beforehand, before it gets into the like final volume or so of the manga. Which I can fully understand because the ending of that manga is a bit of a bummer, but on its own terms. And so I still say cowards to that. But it was still a good one. I still enjoyed it, but it did feel that towards the end it was kind of like both speeding up but also slowing the hell down to not get to the actual ending. But hey,
Yeah, that's interesting, because yeah, like I always assumed that it had kind of dropped off quite a ways before the end, and that there was always kind of like it was open to maybe a second season rather than ending right near the end, but not quite at the end for that reason. So that's yeah, that's kind of a shame.
Yeah, as you say, like the synopsis says, oh, their adventures continue, and it's like, well, not for too much longer.
Yeah, so yeah, kind of on a similar bent, because I figured we might as well mention it, and while we're talking about All Matters Anime, I did want to mention quickly the Tokyo Revengers anime adaptation, which is currently kind of finished its first major story arc, but it will continue into the summer, because this is kind of an interesting example of a series where there was stuff we liked about Volume 1 of this series when we discussed it, but there's also stuff that really kind of frustrated slash infuriated us. And it's kind of really interesting that the anime feels like it really kind of smoothed off a lot of those rough edges, especially around like Takemichi's character, which was our major sort of sticking point, with him being a complete and utter sort of seemingly irredeemable moron, in that first volume. And I feel like the screenwriters on the anime adaptation kind of had the same issue, because it feels like they really sort of, they really pushed away from that to the point where Takemichi is still kind of a bit of an idiot, but not to the point where it's sort of unbelievable that he might ever be able to fix anything. And as a result, he kind of becomes a lot more earnest and likable, which actually I think kind of follows across the cast. Like everyone becomes just a little bit more sort of likable, and it makes the whole thing a lot easier to watch. So it's actually been a really good watch, the anime adaptation. Like obviously it's gone way beyond the volume that we read, but I am really thoroughly enjoying it, and it's been kind of one of my shows of the season. So if you were kind of in the same boat as us and kind of read volume one and was like, I like this, but there's stuff I don't like about it, then the anime might be worth a punt.
Yeah, that sounds really positive. I must admit that when I was going to Crunchyroll for my weekly fix of Thunderbolt Fantasy, I noticed that the site is basically plastered in advertising, advertising Tokyo Revengers. And there was even like several news posts about, oh, about time to go into the next arc. And I'm like, wow, you really are paying attention to that show. But no, that sounds really positive, because, you know, I don't want to rehash all of our previous complaints, which you touched on. But if it kind of like, you know, wipes a heartening brush over the cast, that sounds like a really positive move for that show, for that series even. And, you know, as we discussed at the time, it has like 20 plus volumes of material to go on, so it has quite a deep well to better buffer and like prepare its characters. So I'm not going to rush out and watch it at this point, even with that positive spin, but it's nice to know, especially because I've just started rewatching something we're going to talk about later. So, oops. But yeah, that sounds great. Anything else to mention on that Returning Champions front, Andy?
No, nothing for me at the moment.
Cool. Do you mind if I take first stab? Or first bite, no. I suppose.
There you go. I was gonna correct you with the pun, but you got there before me. So yeah, let's get into it.
Cool. So my first pick is Call of the Night, Volume 1, which is written by and illustrated by Koto Yama, an author who hasn't had anything else released in English, but was the creator of Degashi Kashi, which is in anime form, and that's probably where people know it from, which was a manga looking at Japanese sweets and like all those sweets that kids eat or people eat in those anime that you are like, what the dick are they eating? And it's an investigation into that I bet they can't bring over, because it would be a hilarious like cluster mess of trademarks to have to clear with various different producers, and don't have to think about it. It's published by Viz Media, which means availability is a bit hairy all over the shop. There are 7 volumes in Japanese, with 2 volumes thus far in English. And to try and keep myself pure for this review, I've had to, frankly, like almost like cut my hand off to not read volume 2 ahead of this. So that's what I'm doing straight after this podcast is finished recording, quite frankly, which is a bit of a spoiler for my review. There's no anime yet, although I hope there would be one. I think it'd be quite cool. But basically, Call of the Night is about Ko Yamori, who is a 14-year-old kid. He is literally a chunin. He is in the second year of middle school, and he's found himself restless, feeling a bit ostracized at school, doesn't really want to like do anything. And instead of just retreating into like thinking he's the reborn hero of an ancient general, he just decides he's going to go out at night and walk around at night. And so he finds a very strange girl in a very cool like jacket called Nazuna Nanakusa, who is, well, she's a vampire. She kind of tells him straight up very quickly. And she kind of gloms onto him as someone who is restless in the night and, you know, has a little nibble of his old neck. And turns out he's quite tasty. Also, in this world, vampires are not an immediate like thraldom thing. It turns out that, much to the embarrassment of Nazuna, if you, as the Baitie, are in love with the vampire, you get turned into one, which is kind of cute. But it also means that Ko, being immature and wanting to escape his boring life, is like, cool, turn me into a vampire, and is then disheartened when it doesn't happen, because he's a kid and doesn't really know what love is. And also Nazuna is hella embarrassed the whole time about it. And this goes through sort of Ko and Nazuna's little adventures as they wander the night. Basically, they kind of take in and drink in the joy of the quiet hours and talk about themselves and each other. And, you know, it introduces some of the pressures pushing Ko into his night wanderings. You meet one of Ko's childhood friends, who looks like she is somehow like 20, given the way she's drawn and how tall she is. And she appears to have her own sort of thing going on that leads her to wake up at like 4 a.m, which I could never, ever, ever do, frankly. But she's kind of wandering early in the morning, waiting for school to open, because she doesn't really have anything she wants to do at home. And I don't know if there's something special going on. She strikes me as a bit of a Hanakawa in some weird way, where she's very smart and got it together, but maybe there's something below there. Who knows? But yeah, I'm a big, big fan of it, as you can probably tell. It reminds me a great deal of a great chapter and episode of the While the and Yet the Town Turns anime, where basically the main character and her little brother go for a nighttime walk because they just can't get to sleep and they're too restless mentally and physically, and so they just go and take in the night. And that's one of my favorite things of media, frankly. I really, really enjoy that chapter. The anime chapter is like a tour de force. The anime episode is a tour de force. And yeah, this is kind of like an entire series of that, but with the bonus of funny vampire. So I'm totally down with that. And yeah, as I say, I'm really, really in for this series, and found it really fun. It does a great job of capturing the like allure of the night, where it's the same place as in the day, but it looks and feels entirely differently. And I bet the artist assistants bloody well hate them for having to do all the black tone that's in this series, as do the actual printers. But yeah, I really found myself enjoying the sort of like bumbling around of these two. Before I go on too much further and just steamroll, what did you think of it, Andy?
Yeah, there was stuff I really liked about it. I mean, as you mentioned, I think, you know, there was a cynical part of me where it's like, oh, all of this is going to be set at night, being like, oh, well, good way of not having to draw any other characters around unless you really want to. But like, it does make a really good use of that as its sort of, you know, primary, as its primary kind of space for the characters to inhabit. And it's kind of nice because it does have this sort of unique feeling as a result of just like, you know, this is kind of like a town or a city where, yeah, like, yeah, everyone else is in bed and asleep apart from a few kind of drunks that haven't made it home. And there is a real kind of allure to that right the way through the volume. I do also quite like kind of Nazuna's character. Like, you know, she's pretty fun. I mean, it does feel a lot like they've just transplanted the main character of Dagashi Kashi, but just made her a vampire lady this time, which is, you know, is kind of, in terms of both character design and a little bit in terms of personality. But I think my biggest problem with this volume is it already feels like it's spinning its wheels to me, like, and not helped by the fact that I feel like adding in the childhood friend character already just felt like it was kind of like crowding out the series. Like, I was kind of quite happy to have this just be a very sort of intimate story of these two characters, and maybe have some more, you know, individuals come up that are a bit more kind of occasional. But it sort of already feels a bit to me like three is a crowd there, and it's just gonna add a whole bunch of complexity to a relationship that I would rather have just seen sort of play out straight without that additional wheel added to things. And yeah, I don't know, like, I'm not entirely sure what I kind of wanted to see from the, like, progression of sort of subsequent chapters once it sort of set out its stall and set up its story, but I just felt like I wasn't really getting anything out of those later chapters. I mean, it has a whole thing like around kind of a walkie-talkie device, which felt like it was a bit of a Degashikashi, but with technology transplant of just like, hey, look at this weird old smartphone and look at these weird like radio watch things, which sort of felt like it had sort of fallen out of a Degashikashi side story a little bit. So yeah, I know it felt like there was something missing for me, and I'm not entirely sure what it was. But it just kind of, I sort of got to the end of it. I was like, okay, well, I'm kind of glad I spent a bit of time with those characters, but I'm just quite happy to leave them to their own devices at this point.
Yeah, I can totally see that, honestly. I mean, the main character has the exact same, like, not personality, but has the same sort of, like, stink of manic pixie dream girl that the main female character of Degashikashi had. And now you mention it, and I've just put that together in my head. It does feel that the author could not handle not having that, like, character triangle, like in Degashikashi, but just in this case with the primary and secondary characters' physical attributes swapped, whereas Nazuna's the rather waifish small one, and like what's her name,
Akira
is the like more a developed one, I suppose, to be a bit crude about it. And yeah, that's just kind of brought me down to earth a little bit. Oops. Yeah, the childhood friend angle is also a bit strained, because it's like, well, why is she about? Oh, here is her reason, and hence the sort of like, she's not going to go away, clearly. She clearly has, you know, intention to hang around, which, as you say, has a bit of a habit of cramping everything else that could have been a wider open, like, set of, like, a situation for the characters to wander around in, because you have the whole expanse of the night, and the fact that, you know, Nazuna can fly as a vampire and can impart that temporarily onto Ko, or at least just hold on to him while she jumps. And it feels that already it's kind of, yeah, now you've mentioned that, you're making me a bit of a bummer, but yeah, it's not your fault. I would have figured it out, maybe. But yeah, it now feels like, as you say, as an enclosure. It's now just like, oh, the wide open night, and now we shall focus on these three. And it's like, oh, pup, like, you've just thrown the doors wide open and slammed them shut again.
It's also, I think, doubly weird because, and this is maybe one of those series that kind of started out as, you know, kind of sketched out the broad idea, started creating chapters, and it was like, oh, I guess I need to make more of this now, because it feels so kind of cut and dried that Ko, like, doesn't have any friends, and like it's a repeated kind of refrain through those first few chapters, and then it sort of has to almost shoe in, oh, like, I guess apart from that one kind of friend that I had that I've not spoken to or for a while or mentioned before at any point, who suddenly now is just like a daily part of my life again. And like, it felt kind of shoehorned in. Like, in a way, it might have been better to have her like crop up like pretty early on, even as just, you know, some kind of, you know, somewhat removed childhood friend or whatever, because it felt like it was having to sort of turn a bit of a somersault to be like, oh, when I said I had no friends, I mean, I've got this one friend, but, you know, etc., etc.
Yeah.
So I feel like that maybe it just didn't feel like the most natural transition into that, which I think is partly why I maybe bounced off that particular plot point, whereas had it, because I mean, again, it's kind of Degashikashi as a comparison. And sort of it throws the kind of the main trio together pretty quickly of like, okay, these are your main characters, go. Whereas this, it sort of, it felt very much like, hey, we've got this really sort of genuinely intimate sort of relationship between these two characters, which is like the most interesting part about this series for me, is just like these two characters who are both sort of both loners but also both looking for something like beyond that. but coming at it from very different angles and kind of seeing the two of them trying to partly dance around each other, partly sort of find ways to sort of move closer to one another. Like that was really fascinating to me. And like all of my favorite stuff about this volume, some of which I really do like, is just the kind of back and forth between those two characters as they're kind of trying to understand one another. Cause, you know, Nezana's coming from it very much from a point of view of just like, hey, well, I suck blood, it's what I do, I'm a vampire, like, not really confident about all this love business, but like, I'm quite happy to get it on, quote unquote, with anybody. Whereas Ko is from like the exact opposite angle of just like really looking for somebody or someone to reach out to love in whatever sense that means, and is kind of like far more baffled by the physical intimacy of just like, well, what's like, this isn't really what I'm here for. Like I need something on a deeper level, and kind of watching those two characters sort of set out their stalls and then sort of start shifting around that was kind of the interesting angle of this for me.
Yeah. It feels like they both like socially have an itch they need scratched. Which was, as I say, when it was the pair of them is very interesting. But when you've added in a childhood friend who now has also like airdropped themselves from a great height into the storyline, it feels a little strained. And you know, as I say, it does feel that it's gotten to the point where, you know, it's like, oh, this can't stand alone. I'm not confident in this. Better just make this like the last series I did, which is a bit cruel, I suppose. The one hanging thread that I'm expecting it to pull at some point, and like, it almost feels in the writing that the author themselves has not really kind of put two and two together to realize this, is like, we've already set out the circumstances by which vampires come about. So how did Nezana become a vampire then? You know, that's the bit that I feel that is the massive, like, 600-ton anvil hanging over everything, whether it's intended to or not by the actual author. Because it feels like maybe they set out the whole love equals become vampire thing without thinking that angle through, almost. But, you know, it has the whole, like, you know, physical stuff is fine for vampires because whatever, their bodies are weird anyway. But, you know, intimate stuff is like, verboten. So it does that whole angle. Reminds me vaguely of Arc Red from Tsukihime, except without the like murderous impulses and the weird family bloodline thing and the, well, basically 99% of that series. But it reminds me of Arc, who I really like as a character. So whatever, I just wanted to mention that.
yeah, and it's I do feel like this series sort of does some good justice to the sort of the more erotically charged side of the whole like vampire idea. Like it sort of occasionally it kind of it oversteps its bounds and gets a little bit male gazy about Nezana, but it also has moments where it kind of understands that like, hey, the whole blood sucking thing, like it is sort of an intimate moment between these two characters, and kind of like gives it a certain charge that kind of suits that. And I think it does that stuff really well. And it doesn't kind of like, you know, go sort of full blown sort of pervy about it, but it sort of acknowledges that like, this is like a kind of sexy thing going on here. And so it's going to be kind of framed as such.
Yeah. There's a really good mutation on the JoJo, how many breads have you eaten in your lifeline, where Nezana says, well, if you made a baby every time you ate a sandwich, wouldn't that be messed up? And it's like, yes, that would. That would indeed be very messed up. Let's not think about that any further. I am more also interested in the like 24-hour cafe they go to at one point, and where can I find one of those? Because if I have insomnia, that sounds like just the thing I want to do.
Yeah. And also, more importantly, like, what does Nezana's ID look like? Because I'm just assuming from the fact that she's able to drink beer, even though she kind of looks about the same age as Ko, who is 14, like, she must have, like, some proper formal identification. But I'm also assuming that she is in the typical, like, anime manga tradition of being, like, 400 years old or something. So I need to see her ID, basically.
Yeah, I'm more expecting that she just uses, like, suggestion to wave people away, you know, like Jedi mind trick style. So it's like, oh, I'm 21, and that's it, you know. You know, who knows? But yeah, I was going to say something else. Now. I forgot what it was. Shit. But yeah, you do get this funny aside where she's just like, you know, she says she brings out an old mobile phone she has, which is like a 90s style brick, and she says, "Look, time moves differently from me. I can't keep up with these goddamn phones, and they keep changing constantly, and whatever." And that's quite. I think that's a really interesting little moment where it's just like, hey, you know, she just perceives all this differently. You know, yearly iPhone updates would be intolerable to a vampire, basically.
Yeah. I mean, that certainly, and I that's the kind of stuff. Like, I am sort of curious about future volumes as to whether it delves into that stuff. And like you say, her parentage. Like, you know, there's definitely a question there as to like, hey, you're just living on your own in this weird kind of barren apartment. Like, what's the deal there? There are lots of questions that it set up that it could answer. And I would be more interested in it if it does kind of delve into some of that stuff. I just get the feeling it's probably not going to be too concerned with much of that, at least in the short term.
I'm more interested in the night walking part of it myself as well, like the whole like, oh, we've got the night open to ourselves, let's forge a path in when we should be asleep. Much like, again, that Sorry Matchy chapter. As I say, I've already bought volume 2 anyway, so whether I like it or not, I might as well read it. So that's tonight's thing. So look forward to a future returning champions, I guess. Cool. So I'll let you and the listeners know all about it.
I'm definitely curious to see, you know, whether it because it's like I say, it feels like it's sort of run out of rope a little bit, so it feels like it needs to pivot some way and somehow. So I'd be curious to see where it progresses to.
Yeah, before I blaze past it, the one thing I'll say is that once you see the characters, like especially two of them together, it's like, oh yeah, this is that author, because it has that kind of fun sort of scrappiness to the art, especially around the eyes. Like the eyes are a dead giveaway for this author, and I really enjoy the characters. Like Nazanoh is kind of this, like, she wears a big thick coat, like an overcoat most of the time, and she wears weirdo clothing. I wonder if there's a reason behind all that, but like she's really well, they're both really well drawn and have a lot of sort of interesting stances, I suppose, or like models, like play, like they look like sort of like slightly off center people constantly with their like motions and their poses. So that stuff really comes across, and it does some nice, as I say, it does some nice work with the night and what is illuminated. Obviously, it can kind of save itself from having to do long form backgrounds or like distant backgrounds because it just goes to black. But I really like how it looks. It looks really fun. It kind of, again, it evokes the night. It's not just like, whatever, we're inside a bunch of dark pubs the whole time. So I really enjoy the artwork for that. It doesn't really feel like it stretches its wings quite enough. But it does, like, it does feel very kind of comfortably darkened, I suppose.
Yeah, it makes good use of that kind of aesthetic. And I also like really love the character designs. Like, in a way, I never ever really watched like the Kashi anime, but like the character designs always felt sort of ill-suited for that. Whereas here, for the reasons you've just outlined, they fit really well. And those kind of, the way they stand out and kind of stand against one another, and the kind of sort of like angular feel of them really sort of fits the aesthetic that the series is going for. And it's like, Nazanoh just, it's almost the point where it's kind of a bit of a joke within the series, where Ko's like straight away is like, oh, you're a vampire, right? And it's just like, it kind of makes sense because Nazanoh does just look like a vampire straight off the bat. And it's like, you've nailed that character's look perfectly for what they should look like, basically.
Yeah. It also helps that Nazanoh basically looks like she's a constant smirk. Like, she is just a living embodiment of someone smirking at you. Possibly because you're her dinner, as it turns out. Really, really enjoyed this. One thing that is nice is that it's from Viz, and it's dead cheap on Kindle. So if you fancy it, it's like £4 a volume. So it's kind of not quite, but almost like throwaway purchase level. I recommend it. We'll see how volume 2 comes. So look forward to a future episode of the podcast, I guess.
Cool.
But unless you have anything else to mention?
No, that's nothing else from me on that one.
Cool. So, moving on to our next pick. Andy, do you want to take it away?
Yeah, so I've delved into the world of light novels again for this episode, mostly off the back of like an anime adaptation that I watched quite a while ago, and I've been meaning to pick this for a while but hadn't got around to it. So I picked volume 1 of the light novel series Adachi and Shimamura, which is written by Hitomi Iluma with illustrations by Non. That's not how you pronounce it, but I just have to do it in French because why not? Published by Seven Seas. Currently 5 volumes available in English, with the 6th coming in August, out of 9 volumes in Japan. And so I guess as a little bit of a sort of a string that runs through kind of our picks for this, the main characters of Adachi and Shimomura are also skipping school, or at least skipping classes, quite a lot, as the two titular characters of this series are both, they've been labelled delinquents, but they're not delinquents in that Tokyo Revengers beating the crap out of each other and knifing each other outside school kind of delinquents.
No, that'd be way too really, cool.
Yeah, exactly. They both just skip classes a whole bunch, and this first volume doesn't really delve too much into the whys and wherefores of that, and in fact there's kind of, it sort of alludes to the fact that there's not really any kind of major strife in their lives that is making them do this. It's not like they're from, you know, completely broken homes or anything like that. They're both just kind of drifting, don't really know what they want to do, they don't really have any kind of passions or goals or anything particular going on in their life, so I don't know, school's just kind of boring and they'd rather just like live in their own head spaces and just hang out in a hidden away corner of the school gym.
I mean, sorry, Andy, I'm interrupting you a lot, but I feel like that was the most relatable and honest part of this, was they were just bored. Like, they're bored with school, they've got nothing really driving them, nothing has really spoken to them or called out to them, and so they're basically kind of just skiving off because they want to. And I did that in sixth form as well. I think that was honestly like the masterstroke of this series that got me on board quickly, was that the two of them just don't want to go to class. And that worked.
Yeah.
There's no need for a big backstory or like, oh no, someone confessed to me, but now I've been ostracized by my friends. Kia. Instead, it's just like, nah, I don't want to, I can't be fucked. And it's like, oh no, that's intensely relatable as a plot reason. I'm totally on board for this. Sorry, Andy.
Yeah. And I had very much the same reaction to that because, yeah, like I suspect most people, once you reach that sort of like teenage years as well, you have at least some lessons or classes from time to time. And it's just like, I'm just not here for this. Like, I just want to be somewhere else, even if it's just doing something really boring and hiding out somewhere else in the school. So yeah, I was kind of with you on that. But yeah, so basically kind of Adachi and Shimomura are both kind of truants skipping classes off of their own backs, not as a duo. But as it turns out, they both end up kind of convening in the same hiding place in the gym, and so given that there aren't really many good places to hide in your average school, they just kind of decide they may as well share that space. They kind of end up talking a little bit, they play a bit of ping pong because, hey, you're in a gym, why not? And the two of them just kind of fall in together a little bit. And that's pretty much it as far as the story goes. As this volume progresses, the two of them both kind of find themselves pondering what their relationship to one another is. And particularly in Adachi's case, like, she clearly is wrestling with what she is in denial as being romantic feelings, but clearly, like, she is interested in Shimomura in a way that is more than just kind of a simple friendship, and she's kind of like starting to try and like get to grips with that stuff in her head, whereas Shimomura is kind of a bit more just like go with the flow and just like, I don't know, like, this girl I'm hanging out with says some real weird things sometimes, but it's cool, like, you know, I'm cool hanging out with her, she's nice enough, blah blah blah. There is also, weirdly, and I, even having watched the anime adaptation, I have zero explanation for this, I'm not sure why she's there. There's also some weird kind of little girl in a spacesuit called Yashiro Chikama, who just turns up from time to time. She's clearly seems to be some kind of actual alien. She's weird, she's bonkers, she turns up to kind of pester various characters through this series, and it sort of reminded me a little bit of Ground Control to Psychoelectric Girl, a series that also kind of tried to split the difference between sort of slice of life and romance stuff and throw in some really weird kind of, like, you know, supernatural / sci-fi elements, and this sort of feels like it tries to do the same thing. I'm genuinely not sure how I feel about that side of it. It kind of It feels like it doesn't really need to be there, but at the same time, I don't really have any particular problems with it being there. It's just sort of, it feels like a weird pivot for a series that is otherwise pretty kind of, plays it with a straight bat as far as everything else going on in this world is concerned.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. To give a look behind the scenes again, after finishing this, I once again leaned on that wonderful resource of listener and patron, Demelza Ward, who has read more of this than I have, and basically asked us straight up, like, what is the deal with this character? Does this go anywhere? And I won't dive into the response I received, but that was my first question, basically, was what is the deal with this character? Because, like, initially, you think, oh, it's a weird kid from the neighborhood that Shimamura's friend has pawned off on Shimamura because she just wants to go fishing and not have this, like, frankly, just weirdo around her. And, like, very quickly, said weirdo takes the helmet off and has, like, a blue, like, luminescent hair that sheds blue particles that I initially thought, oh, this must be a thing that only Shimamura can see. Maybe this is something in her head or some kind of weird maladaption. But no, everyone else can see her doing it as well. And so it just turns out you have this, like, blue-haired alien hanging out who says, I'm 560 years old. I like donuts. And it's like, What the hell are you doing here? Like, I don't understand why the character is there, and I don't know if there's any reason for them being there other than it's just an alien in your series with a pair of teens trying to come to terms with themselves, like with their friendship and sexuality. And I don't know what she's doing there apart from, like, being shoehorned in constantly. It feels almost like, this is probably way off the mark, and I'd be happily corrected on this, and it's probably just me reading too much into it, and you can tell by the way I'm saying it that I kind of hope this is the case, that I'm wrong, but it feels like the author didn't have the confidence in their core romantic and relationship to just let it be that, and so had to add in this alien to spice things up or have like an off ramp to help provide a buffer, both for like in between romantic sections or like to be a third wheel. And that's what it feels like. It feels like, what's her name? God, I've written it down. I have. Space Lady. Space Girl.
Yashiro,
thank you. Yashiro Chikama. There you go. But like, I looked online and other people were of the same opinion. People are like, why is she here? And I don't know why she's there. Like, she doesn't really do much to push along the storyline apart from eat the character's food, and doesn't even she's not there as a spoiler or anything. It's just there. And I don't know what the hell she's doing there. And I didn't like hate her. I can't bring myself to want to throw a paddy about it and complain. But I just don't know why she's there, which is the most confusing part. And at the same time is written very consistently and is there for her own reasons. But like, it just kind of comes as like a break in the ongoing storyline, which honestly, this was an easy read, but I must admit that I have no interest in reading more of it, because even just 30% of this in, I was screaming just kiss already at the page. Because although, you know, Adachi like has denied feelings for Shimamura, and Shimamura is pretty cool about it, but I feel like there's a lot more reciprocity there than maybe it sounds like. I don't know. I feel like Shimamura is basically in for what's going down anyway. And is herself just a lot more chill about it, because you spend most of the initial time in Shimamura's head, with her sort of thought processes, you know, in that typical light novel fashion. And I thought, oh, it's just going to be Shimamura. And then in chapter 3, it jumps to Adachi's like self-talk, and she is literally having a dream where she is kissing Shimamura. And it's like, oh, come on. Like, okay, this is a bit much. We're now. And also, frankly, to like hand things back to you, Andy, with a question, but was it just me, or did they have like both extremely similar sort of just speech, or was that just me kind of like being a bit mean on the series?
There is a bit of that for sure. Like, I think the reason it gets away with that for me is that it felt like sort of relatable teenage conversations for the most part, and even their kind of like internal monologues are of that sort of kind of slightly melodramatic kind of, you know, perhaps overly thoughtful kind of mannerisms that you know, you maybe tend to have at that sort of time where everything is of massive import.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're figuring out the meaning of life and you're the only person that really knows what's going on in the world. And, you know, why is nobody else figuring out this stuff that I'm pondering in my head?
Yeah, both of them are very clearly protagonist to themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Again, one of my first notes was like both of them are entirely within their own heads, perhaps, as you know, you would expect, and we've just mentioned. So yeah,
but no, like, I mean, I came down on it, I just really enjoy spending time with these characters. Like, in a way, it almost kind of, it's a very different series, but it's sort of similar in terms of my response to it to like something like Hidamari Sketch, where it's just like, I just want to spend time with these idiots. And I just kind of like enjoy watching them interact with one another and with other people. And like that is kind of, like you say, this is an easy read. Like, I think, yeah, like regardless of how you come down on it, it's well written. Like, it's, you know, it flows really nicely. It doesn't outstay its welcome for too long. It's always kind of moving on and finding the next thing to do. But yeah, I know, I just really like both of the main characters. I kind of like their attitudes towards life and one another. I'm kind of just enjoying watching them figuring things out as they go along. And yeah, I don't know, there is just something about the cast, really, above all else, that just kind of keeps me on board with them. And it's likewise with the anime adaptation, which I think the anime was really good at pulling out some of those best kind of inner monologue moments where it just really kind of like nails a part of the human experience as kind of some pondered sort of teenage thought. And it kind of really like pulls out like the greatest hits of those. And you sort of realize reading this one, like there's a whole lot more to them where they may be sort of a little bit less insightful that I think the anime kind of skipped past. But no, I just kind of like spending time with these characters and would honestly like happily spend more time with them, kind of just watching them figure things out and just kind of, you know, watching it from both characters' viewpoints as well. Like the switch from sort of, you know, Shimamura's point of view to Adachi's is kind of like, oh, okay, we're doing this kind of moment, but it sort of works quite well to get you into both of their headspaces, and to kind of move things forward from there. So yeah, I don't know, I really enjoyed this. It's definitely, you know, had this been longer or kind of more convoluted or tried to be more kind of complex or sort of, you know, serious than it was, I think it would have fallen flat. Like, it finds just the right tone to stick with and just kind of runs with it. I mean, the afterward mentions the author was basically told by his editor, hey, why don't you write something like Yuri Yuri? And it's like, well, you've not managed that at all, because that's not really what you've ended up with. But I think you've actually like nailed something pretty interesting, despite the question marks about why the space alien girl.
Yeah, I feel like they've nailed something about Yuri Yuri, if not quite what Yuri Yuri is, if that makes sense. Like, there is the relationship element of Yuri Yuri being this like steady state, like, you know, like pink-haired one being pushed away by the serious tomboyish one. Man, I am even worse with names than normal today. Chinatsu and... can't remember. Crap, I'm going to get yelled at for this. But yeah, I love Yuri Yuri. I want to rewatch that now. But yeah, the main problem I have with this series is that I like the pair of them hanging out. I like the wheel spinning. The problem is that it feels like they are both wheel spinning so hard that there should be development, but as a result, it just feels like they're going backwards. Like, towards the end of this volume, I was getting slightly annoyed because I'm like, is this building to anything? Like, there's progression here, but I don't know in which direction. It feels like they're going backwards, even though they're having this like weirdly heartfelt karaoke session. And like, I like all the interactions and I like the characters hanging out and I like them with like Shimamura's weird old friends, who are probably the best you could have for in that situation, where they're non-judgmental about the whole truancy thing. And they seem like more, if anything, those two feel like the anime characters. Like, they feel like characters out of an anime with an anime level of character. Whereas obviously we've spent the entire book inside Adachi and Shimamura's heads. And so it's kind of a fact where you're like, oh no, these are fleshed out. And so I like the pair of them. But at the same time, it does feel that, like, I it feels like there's enough hallmarks there that I'm expecting progression, but it's not providing any. Like, there's no development in their relationship apart from what feels like them both distancing each other from each other, mostly because both of them are coming to terms with possible feelings. And also there's this goddamn space alien there who I don't know the reason for them being there, but surely they wouldn't write in a space alien without there being a point to it. And yeah, it just feels like a really strange distraction that is like, I don't know, like I can't figure out why that is there. I've already mentioned that at length. But yeah, for me, I found it just slightly grating enough where I wanted something to happen, but the series, like, is in its best world when it's not pushing things forward or having developments and, you know, Kia Doshio, like 600 different misunderstandings, ahoy. So I don't know. I'm not sure if I'm going to continue with this. Maybe I'll let you continue, Andy, and maybe I'll see how it goes. But yeah, it's charming enough. And as I say, it's an easy read. Like, you can kind of just pick it up and go and, you know, do. And it's a fun old, just like lay back on the sofa, read on your e-reader type thing. So, you know, if you want to read that with a slight tinge of Yuri to it, then yeah, here you are. It does what it wants.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely think that's kind of, yeah, sort of broadly where I come down on it. I mean, I do feel like there is enough progression in the main relationship to kind of, to make it work, especially kind of considering, you know, it's a couple of awkward teenagers who really kind of haven't figured out what the heck they're doing or what the heck they want from life. I mean, it's sort of like, Adachi in particular, I mean, makes a number of attempts during this volume to try and sort of progress things without even really knowing what she wants, and kind of either ends up like just like feeling super embarrassed about it and then saying like, ah, no, I've changed my mind, or just kind of coming across as being a bit weird to Shimomura, whereas, yeah, Shimomura is very much just like taking it as it comes and just be like, hey, you know, I like hanging out with you, so I'm kind of down with whatever happens here. And I don't know, I find that relationship kind of quite fascinating as just like two sort of awkward teenagers who are not really into sort of being sociable with anybody else, and so don't really have the sort of experience to just like figure this stuff out and talk it out for themselves, and just sort of watching them stumble through that just feels like a very teenage thing to happen, and so I'm kind of here for that. But yeah, like, this is definitely, I feel like, especially in light novel terms, this is probably like one of the more relaxing light novels that I've read. Like, there's not really any sort of, you know, massive sort of pressure on anyone or anything within that series. It's just kind of, you know, there's no real particularly sort of high stakes or anything. Like, you know, even in the sort of, you know, typical sort of high school sort of slice of life genre, you know, there's no real drama here. Like, even when, you know, Adachi kind of runs off embarrassed about something, it's not this kind of, you don't have a whole chapter of just like, oh god, like, what's gonna happen. Like, it's Shimomura is pretty chilled out of just like, I'll send her a message, see what's going on. She's not responded to my message, I'm just gonna go around to her house and ask. And it's just like, you know, not this sort of constant, like, massive, you know, oh, what if she hates me, blah, blah, blah. Like, it kind of gets through all of that pretty quickly and be like, okay, well, I'm just going to go and resolve this problem. And I sort of appreciate all of that stuff around it as well.
Yeah, totally. I think, as I say, that, yeah, no, it works really well in that regard, mostly because it gets out of its own way. I think the only real stumble is the, like, as I say, the, like, early in chapter 3, like, sexual realization dream that Adachi has, which maybe just set me up for expecting something. But then again, teenager, unsure, second guessing everything, has to overthink absolutely, absolutely everything. So yeah, as I say, it's my main benefit to this series is that it's such easy reading and kind of just comfortable to, like, watch these characters bumble around. And also, it's not like yuck yuck kill the demon lord stuff. It's just extremely mundane, which is fun in its own way. Like, yeah, you know, like how nice it is to have a nice scarf, you know, shit like that.
yeah, I mean, and it is very much, yeah, it's kind of like quite a warm and fuzzy series to sit down and read at the end of the day. So, you know, and sometimes that's just what you need.
Totally. Yeah, so, and it was a nice read to counteract everything else we sometimes look at. So, hooray. cool. Literally, got anything else to mention about Adachi and Shimomura?
Nothing from me.
No. Oh yeah, the illustrations are nice. They are, like, accurately fluffy. The cover basically continues throughout. I don't know. It feels like they're a pair of cream puffs given human form and teenage problems. So, you know.
Yeah. 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 Very, very much so.
Yeah. Cool. So, moving on to our picks for next episode. So, finally, I have picked the one true manga, the only reason there is to do a manga podcast. I have, and also, thankfully, it's now available and not in some insane Kickstarter all on one device thing. I have picked volume one of Fist of the North Star by Tetsuo Hara and Bronson, which is now available from Viz and is like 300 pages of you know, manly tears garbage. So have fun with that, Andy. I'm also rewatching the anime, all 100 plus episodes in the background. So hooray. I forgot how much filler there is. Andy, how about you?
Yeah, so I'm going to the other end of the scale for something more recent. It seems to, from recent news that I've seen float around, seems to be burning up the sales charts at the moment. So
it seems to be suddenly a big, big deal. I haven't read any of it yet, but it does seem like it's become a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. So I figured, yeah, we should rectify that as soon as possible. So my pick is the Shonen Jump title currently running, Kaiju number 8.
And thankfully, you don't need to read Kaijus 1 through 7. Ha ha ha. Sorry. Anyway, so moving on to close down. So thank you very much for listening. If you like the podcast, you can find all the rest of our episodes at the website, screentone.club. If you like what we're doing here, bad jokes and all, you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/screentoneclub. You can support us from a mere sum of $1 a month, and any amount is greatly, greatly appreciated. In fact, if anything, it's the small donations that kind of make you feel, ah, oh, this person cared enough to actually go through the like Patreon process. Wow. Isn't that lovely? And it is lovely. You can also find us on Twitter at Screentone Club. As mentioned, shortly after this, we're going to announce what's our next bonus episode. So by the time you've listened to this, it will be out already. Hooray. And that'll be recorded before the end of the month as normal. You can email us if you so wish at show@screentone.club. My name is Elliot Page. You can find me at Elliot Page on Twitter, mostly tweeting about, my small garden and my cat. And Andy, how about you?
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at Hannahs1979.
Cool. So, thank you very much from both of us, and good night.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.